Daisy.
And I'm Terry.
And this is the Monday Mindset Podcast,
where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 18. This week, it's Terry's turn to share with us something that she's found interesting this week. What have you got for us, Terry?
Well, Daisy, going to talk about a podcast episode that I listened to. And also, I have followed this person a little bit. I've watched some of her TV episodes as well as have read some articles. But this was an episode of a podcast that you and I have both enjoyed, the Mind Valley podcast.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
With Vishen Lakhiani. And in this episode, he interviews Mel Robbins. And the title of it is How to Stop Screwing Yourself Over. If you're not familiar with Mel Robbins, background-wise, she has a law degree. I don't know a lot about her former career, but she was successful. Her husband was in the restaurant business. They were successful. And they hit a patch of time, I'm guessing around 2008, where everything just kind of tanked and everything was going poorly. They were heading into bankruptcy. They were over $800,000 in debt due to the restaurant industry, what was happening in his businesses. They were unhappy in their marriage. She was drinking a lot to escape all of these stressors and things. And she came up with this approach that really helped her and has since become pretty famous for it. She did a TED Talk. She describes it as one of the worst TED Talks ever. And she said, if you're interested in knowing what a 22-minute panic attack looks like, you should watch this TED Talk.
That's a good advert. I'm definitely going to watch it now.
But, you know, her point is she was struggling. She didn't know she really had something that was so valuable to other people. And now, at this point, she is one of the most listened to kind of thought leaders and motivational speakers. She has her own TV episodes where she kind of walks through people helping solve their problems and things. And it's interesting for me because sometimes people like this grate on my nerves a little bit because they're gaining credit as if they are behavioral experts by training, and really hers is more by experience. She does back it with science though, so I really do like that. But it's really so much ways that she has learned to deal with things. Her own experiences with anxiety helped her to figure out she needed some strategies, and now she can help other people use those. So the episode in itself and how it was structured, I'll cover some of that, but it's not the main point of what I want to share, because it actually, much of what they talked about was in response to the current pandemic. And, you know, this is a time of great uncertainty. When this episode was recorded, it was only a couple months in. So tons of uncertainty and really her sharing how to kind of get out of that being stuck place in all of that. I'm guessing for most people, a lot of what she talked about would still apply. So she talked about things like identifying what your triggers are, what thoughts and fears are triggering for you so that you already know what they are. So when those thoughts come to you, you're not thrown off task by them. You know them, and then you can work on using her strategy, and then you can work on replacing them with more positive thoughts. So for example, for her, one of the uncertainties about the pandemic that is very fear-driven for her is, will her two college-age daughters ever go back to school? Will they be able to return to campus? And of course, there's so many things that we don't get to control about that. And so the idea of rather than trying to control that, to get back to a more positive place of, in her mind, she said January. They're going to go back in January. And so every time that fear comes to her, she can just say, you don't have to figure that out right now. They'll go back in January. And that helps her not focus on the unknown and all of the what ifs. So there were a lot of interesting things about the episode. Another thing related to the pandemic that I thought was just really interesting, it sent me down a little bit of a rabbit hole to learn more about this, a concept of moral fatigue. And she talked about one of the reasons why so many of us are feeling so exhausted during this pandemic. And she uses a little more lively language than I usually do here. But, you know, she might say, you might wonder why you're so tired when all you're doing is sitting on your ass all day. But it's the idea that we are having to make so many more decisions, and decisions that feel very important morally, right and wrong. Now, several months before the pandemic, you thought about getting a gallon of milk. For many of us, it just entailed, do I have some money, going to the store, getting the milk? But now, do I have my mask? Is it safe to go? How many people are already there? Which direction do I walk up the aisle? Has someone touched the milk? Should I clean it before I take it? Can I come close to the register? You know, it's just these thousands of decisions that we're having to be bombarded with. And again, the kind of moral right and wrong nature that underlies so many of them. So I thought that was just interesting to think about. This is an added layer of exhaustion that has been happening for many of us for months now.
It's not something you necessarily think about, is it? But when you were talking about it then, you can feel the weight and the pressure.
Because it's just changed everything.
Mm.
But the real point of what I want to share from this episode, and it's, again, it's something she's pretty famous for. She's written a book about it and articles about it. It's her process that she teaches people. One of the things she says is, your life is defined by the gap between what happens to you and your reaction to it. The strategy she's created is what she calls the 5-second rule. And the 5-second rule closes the gap between thinking about what needs to be done and actually doing it. And I know outside of recording podcasts, this is something that you and I talk quite a bit about, because each of us struggle with our own things that we want to do in our lives and things we value, but have some challenges getting them going or keeping them going. So I thought about both of us when I listened to this episode, and I think it applies for most people. So the 5-second rule is, when you get the urge to do something, and I'll talk a little bit more in detail about the steps, but you get this urge, you start and you count backwards from 5. So you feel the urge, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. She talks about when she first came to this, she was watching a video with a rocket ship and she just watched it blast off. And she thought, maybe that's what I need to do. When I feel kind of like I can't get out of bed in the morning because things are so difficult, maybe I just need to blast out this, you know, this sudden movement. So this is what she started doing. So again, the rule is you do a 5-second count backwards, and then you take the action. So then I want to talk a little bit about the reason why this works and some of the kind of information behind it, because that in and of itself, you and I would be done at this episode right here. So when you need to do something, just count backwards, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, boom. Great. That's a great episode. But I think there's a ton about this that makes it really interesting. Partly that you and I've talked before about our brain chemicals and our brain pathways tend to create habits for us that are problematic. Our brain basically does 3 things overall. It narrates our lives and stores memories. It operates our bodily function, and it protects us from danger. And this protecting us from danger, you and I have talked about before, and it comes up in a lot of these behavioral kinds of topics, because although these things aren't actually dangerous, they're maybe uncomfortable, they're difficult, and our brain tries to protect us from that. So we get lost in these habits of lack of movement when we know there's something we should be doing. So her example, if she really knows she needs to get out of bed and get the day going, she turns the snooze button 3 or 4 times. She thinks about all the reasons she doesn't want to get up. And then she goes back to sleep and stays in bed for a couple more hours, which most of us could probably relate to. First of all, she talks about the process is about identifying the instinct. And really, an instinct is an urge or an impulse or a pull or a knowing that you should do or should not do something but you feel it in your gut. This is the instinct. She said, it's not just an impulse like you're at the bar, you should buy everyone a round of drinks. It's more about an instinct that is tied to a goal. So if you want to start your own business, the instinct is, I'm going to create a business name. Mm-hmm. Like, I need a name. Mm. There's the instinct. Then you have to push yourself because there's this very short window of time where you have the instinct and your brain will quickly interfere to shut it down. So your brain will go into the fight or flight mode. It will be activating the amygdala, which is more of an emotional processing. And it bypasses our prefrontal cortex. And that's the part of our brain that's responsible for decision-making, planning, and working toward goals. So if we're not accessing that part of our brain, we're accessing this other part that allows us to fall into those old habits of staying safe. So the 5-4-3-2-1 countdown interrupts this process. It pushes you out of that autopilot place and gets you into your prefrontal cortex so that you can do the planning, strategizing, and working toward a goal.
Where you need to be.
It's a way of exercising control. Mm. The other piece that's really important with this process is it's not just, say, for example, her needing to get out of bed. It's not just lying there saying 5-4-3-2-1. Okay, now I still need to get up. While you're doing that, you actually have to move toward the goal. Now, you do not have to shoot out of bed like the rocket ship example she talked about, but you do need to start to get up. You need to start physically moving toward the goal. And you and I talked about this in a very early episode, the one that I shared about Andrew Huberman's work and parts of the brain that actual physical movement helps us make progress as well. So very important here. Otherwise, if you're not starting to take movement in the direction of the goal, again, the brain will kill the instinct. It will turn it off. It'll give you a reason not to go do what it is you need to do. So as I read more about this, her approach, I, you know, looked into some more things about what happens and why this strategy is so important. And again, counting backwards is really important. It gets us out of that certain part of our brain and gets us into the prefrontal cortex. It can be a varied amount of time, but I want to emphasize this. The longer you give yourself, the more likely your brain's going to step in and kill that instinct. Mm. So she encourages, if you can do it in 3 countdown, just, you know, 3-2-1, that's even better. But I probably, for most of us, would not recommend going much beyond 5 because then we leave too much room open for that instinct to be killed. Something that you mentioned last week fits in here. She talked about the idea of the internal locus of control, that us having a sense of control helps us move forward and helps us take action. If we believe that things are being controlled outside of us, there's less reason to take action towards something. And some studies really show that people who have more of an internal locus of control tend to be happier and tend to have less depression. So I think this is an important idea. This 5-second rule also touches on the principle of momentum. And that is that when you get something started, that activation energy required is higher than the amount of energy it takes to keep it going. Mm. So with this principle of momentum, if you can think back to the structure, I believe it's called Newton's cradle, where you have like kind of balls on a string suspended and you pick one on the end, you pull it back, and when you let go, it will knock the other ones, and now the momentum will keep it going. That energy it took to do the first one was the most energy required. Mm. And then it has that, just the principle of momentum keeps it moving. Also talked about the progress principle, and that making some progress is key to productivity and to happiness. And those steps of progress can be very small. They do not have to be huge ways of measuring progress, but progress helps motivate us and keep us going. It also creates a positive feedback loop. So we get an urge to do something negative and really emphasizes the idea that this is natural. This is human. You know, there's not something wrong with us because we don't want to do something or because we want to do something that would interfere. But the fact that we don't act on that urge and we do the other thing that we need to do, either we avoid something or we do engage in something, that gives us that positive feedback loop, which creates the golden rule of habit. So by replacing a negative behavior after the urge, we create a bias toward further action. And so something as simple as this 5-second rule, not letting ourselves lose that instinct to do something we know needs to be done. Don't let our brain kill it to try and keep us safe from any discomfort. Start to move forward, count backwards to 5, or, you know, from 5, and then boom, start taking action, that it really can get all of those steps in motion and help us really achieve our goals, change our lives, accomplish whatever we need to do. And she found that when she started doing this, after a few days, things really started to change for her. She didn't stay in bed in the morning. She put the alcohol away. You know, a lot of things changed. And then her husband started using the strategy and started making difficult business decisions that he needed to make. And they got out of debt and turned their careers around. And obviously now she has her own television show and highly sought after motivational speaker. So I really wanted to just share this strategy. It's such a simple strategy, but there's really so much behind why it can be useful that I thought this would be a good one for people just looking for something small to do that can have a big impact.
Yeah, I find that fascinating. And as is so often the case, I don't know how much you do this intentionally, but you're speaking directly to me when you use your example. Did she do that on purpose? Because you know me so well, so you have the advantage there. But yes, when you were describing that, it was so, what I found the most interesting was the part about the period of time being important and how your brain works against you. Obviously, I mean, it's not working against you, as we've spoken about. It's a protective measure. There's a quote unquote good reason it's doing it, but it works against us if it's going against something that we've decided to do, like getting up. I found that fascinating, that leaving it too long bypasses the very part of the brain that you need to access. And that seems to be the key thing about that timing, is that you've got to do it within that period of time to be able to access the bit that you need to access. And also what you were talking about, inertia and momentum, that the most difficult bit is starting. And what I'm wondering is about how to put it into practice. I'm guessing that all those things link together, that you need to strengthen the internal locus of control with this 5-4-3-2-1 and overcome the inertia. See, I'm thinking, how am I going to apply this tomorrow morning? It's one of these things that sounds great in theory. How am I going to ensure that I apply it? Is that the pain point? Is that the bit that you've just got to make yourself do it a few times to start forming the new habit? Because I can make all sorts of really good decisions at night about what I'm going to get done tomorrow, what time I'm going to get up. And when it comes to the moment that I'm supposed to be getting out of bed, unless I have to be out of bed at a certain time to be somewhere, morning brain is much more controlling and saying, no, it's nice and cozy in here, go back to sleep. So how do I make sure it happens? Because it sounds great. And it sounds like the kind of thing that once you get going, the momentum's going to build and it becomes a habit. I'm just wondering about that first part, that first bit to get over.
I think that's a great question. And one of the things I would maybe, I don't know what Mel Robbins would say about this, but what I would say about this is I might start it practicing with some other things. Because that one for you feels so, you have a history of resistance to that. And so to say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to start doing it completely different. You might not feel ready to really use this skill yet. So I might use this skill on smaller things like, oh, I really should wash those dishes. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you walk toward the sink. Do it with some other things, maybe even for like the next week, and just really build on that, that self-efficacy that can be built of feeling the instinct, acting on it, completing the task, feeling good about that, and then start to apply it to these more complicated things.
Yes, that goes back into what you were saying about the small steps. So doing it with something that doesn't feel so difficult. Doesn't feel like so much of a challenge, doesn't feel like even that I feel the need to have to ask you how I'm going to do it because it's that easy. So yeah, there are plenty of things I can think about that would be easy enough to implement for.
And I know that this goes a little against something you shared last week. The woman that you talked about actually encouraged picking the harder things. Is that right?
Yes, but she did have the caveat of saying it depends on your personality type.
Yeah.
And that's where you get into things like one of the things that I find most interesting are Gretchen Rubin's four tendencies. And it's something I'm always very aware of, being a rebel tendency, of having that natural instinctive resistance to anybody telling me to do something, including myself. So I'm always kind of working up against that. But knowing that is very useful because that then shapes the best way to approach it, the best kind of strategies to put in place.
And here's how I imagine it working for you. If you practice it first with other things so that you gain some confidence with this strategy working for you, to me, it reminds me a little bit of when I really drastically 6 years ago changed the way I was eating. I used to spend a lot of time debating, am I going to stop at the store and get cookies tonight? Which flavor will I buy and how many? How many will I eat while I'm still sitting in the car before I even leave the parking lot? How many more will I eat on my drive home? If I have any left, will I finish them or save them? It was all of this energy and this tension I created with myself. When I stopped eating cookies, I didn't have that question anymore. I didn't have to engage in any of that. And so if you really start practicing this, when I have the instinct about something I know that needs to happen and I jump into movement and this countdown, I don't have a question. But currently, if I lie in bed and say, well, do I really have to get up now? No, because, you know, when you remove that luxury of debate, I think you'll find the strategy can really work for you. But I think it will help to strengthen the strategy first.
No, very interesting. And those who have a rebel tendency can actually be very highly motivated to do something when they've decided it's a good idea. And then they just do it.
And I think that is definitely possible with this. The more you see that getting up immediately, you might even do something that you really enjoy first thing in the morning. Maybe you don't start off with three tasks you don't like to do, but it may become so self-reinforcing that you don't have to actually continue to use that strategy for very long before that behavior just becomes natural.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. I am going to put it into practice almost immediately.
Nice.
I'll let you know how I got on.
Thank you.
But yeah, I love that. Very easy. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
You know, Daisy, as we're talking about this, one of the things I'm aware of from what I shared about the episode I listened to, their overall focus, though it was about the 5-second rule, it really also was more about just how to kind of move forward right now during COVID. And so in that process, I dug around a little bit and read some other articles. She does have a book called The 5-Second Rule. So I assume you could learn a lot more in-depth information about why this works there. And I know sometimes people don't care why something works. They just want the strategy and they'll make it work. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I poked around and found a few articles to read from her and got a little bit more of the background of it so that I could understand a little bit more of the underlying pieces of the process.
Oh, I love knowing why it works. And I think it also, again, I guess depending on your personality, but certainly for mine, I'm definitely also a questioner. So I like those answers. I was one of those children who would repeatedly ask why. But the main reason for that is that it helps me understand. And when I understand, I'm more likely to do whatever it is that needs doing.
Sure.
So when you were talking about that whole bit about the more you delay, the more you argue with yourself in bed about, you know, you've really got to get up. And I've even counted to 10 or something. And it's so funny thinking about that. The length of time is important. And I just left it too long. And actually knowing that just by doing that, my brain starts working against me. You know, fascinating stuff.
It's almost like you've thrown down the gauntlet, like, okay, I'm going to get up unless you can find some good reasons I shouldn't.
Yeah.
And your brain's kicking in right away to tell you why you shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, fascinating stuff. I've definitely found that interesting. And I'm definitely going to be applying it straight away, probably. But if not, certainly tomorrow and moving forward. I bet there are quite a few people at home who are going to be trying it too.
Great.
So thank you very much.
And I think it applies to big behaviors and small behaviors. Mm. Just even like, I need to make this phone call. I can put off a phone call for days and weeks.
Me too.
And so, you know, the idea of 5-4-3-2-1 phone is being dialed. Like that to me is just such a tangible way to make action steps really quickly with this strategy.
Mm.
And Daisy, knowing that we need to end this episode now, though my brain is telling me lots of reasons to hang in here, yeah. I'm going to say 5-4-3-2-1. Have a great week, everybody.
Have a great week.